Right now it is time to bring in David Tarachuk. It's time for the Media Beat. David joins us on a Friday morning. He has his own website, themediabeat.us. He's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And once again, we say good morning to David. Good morning, David.
Well, hello. It's good to be with you.
Nice to have you along with us in a corona virus-free zone here at Robin Hood Radio.
So far, nobody coughing and spluttering. I'm glad to hear it.
But you know what's interesting, and I will say that it has raised the one good thing about the coronavirus, and it even affected me to this point, it raised awareness. I got sick on Monday. And instead of coming into work, which I've always prided myself as always going into work no matter what, but instead of coming in and possibly infecting other people with whatever bug I had, I stayed home for Tuesday and Wednesday. It wasn't easy. I did work a little bit out of my studio in the morning at my house each day, but I stayed home. And I think the one good thing about the coronavirus is that I think American people, and even I think people now who run businesses, understand that it's a far wiser decision if you are sick and you think that you have something that you might transmit to not go in and stay home. And it will affect the health rate not only for people with coronavirus, but the common cold and the flu, everything else. I mean, that's the one good thing about all this crazy panic. And I mean, it is a scary thing, the coronavirus. Every new virus that comes out that needs to be treated is scary. But it really has made complete sense that every business that has employees should have sick days so they don't come in and get everybody else sick. And just stay home. Keep your kids home when they're sick. I mean, it would make a huge difference in the transmission of every disease in this country.
Well, Marshall, excuse me, that is not a suspicious cough. That is just an early morning cough on my part. I think you might also be suffering from an outbreak of common sense. it makes absolute sense to do just that. But, you know, couple of nights ago now, or was it only last night? Every day is something of a news blur for me at the moment. That extraordinary repository of hugger-mugger collaboration, Fox News, and in particular the Hannity show, had on our chief executive, the commander-in-chief of our armed services, Donald J. Trump, and he was subjecting us to his usual combination when it comes to coronavirus. Excuse me. His usual combination of optimism, pseudoscience, and bombast. And of course, self-contradictory confusion. But one of the things he said to Hannity was that it was probably a good idea, even if you had the coronavirus, to go to work. So, you know, you're out of step, I'm afraid, with the occupant of the Oval Office when you suggest that it was just a sensible thing to do, to take a day or two off because you were feeling not well. The American economy can take it. And in fact, you're probably right in saying the American economy would benefit if more people did actually take the day off when they weren't well.
You know, that
feeling so good.
That comment you just made just brought me back to the day after 9/11, when it was suggested that to get over 9/11, everybody should continue shopping. Do you remember that
from President George W. Bush? Yes.
I mean, I know what he meant.
He was trying to be resolute and optimistic. Yeah, sure, but, and I suppose this president is trying to be resolute.
No,
I think too. But resolute doesn't quite work with him, especially when he manages in one sentence to say two opposing things completely.
I can't compare. You know what? I won't do that to George Bush. I won't compare him to Donald Trump.
Do you think it's cruel and unusual? punishment against George W. Bush.
Because
huh?
I really think basically at heart George Bush is a nice guy to sit down and have a beer or a drink with, like Barack Obama. But I don't think that Donald Trump is a great guy to sit down and have a drink with. I'm sorry. there's a basic human quality that's missing.
He doesn't drink beer. That may or may not count against him. But certainly not a pally kind of chap to kick back with. No, I don't think so. He's there are many things you can say about this current president, but pally is not one of them. I think it's interesting to recall George Bush now, and in some ways, there's lots of interesting argument about what he did and what Trump did to the institution of the presidency. It was more or less harmful. Which of the two was worse? I mean, in some ways, it could be said that George W. Bush was worse. I mean, at least Trump hasn't taken us into an entirely needless war yet, that is. And that was the case with Iraq. And I don't think history will ever forgive George W. Bush for that aspect of his presidency.
I wish that history would recognize the eminent role of his vice president, who basically directed the president in all those things. But he seems to, except for some extremists, he seems to largely not be mentioned with the whole New World Order that they tried to create.
Sure. He certainly played a big role. It's interesting, a name from that era, the judge who sent Scooter Libby to jail. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Scooter Libby, who worked for Vice President Cheney during all of that. And Judge Reggie Walton is back in the news again on a matter dear to the hearts of journalists and media people generally. In his court, he just made a judgment on a Freedom of Information Act suit. There's an attempt led by the Electronic Privacy Information Center and BuzzFeed together, the journalistic website, trying to get hold of the full text of the Mueller report. And Reggie Walton, as judge, is no slouch when it comes to being assertive as a judge. He basically came out swinging against the Attorney General. He's saying that he wants to be able to make a judgment. He needs to see the unredacted version of the Mueller report. That's his judgment. Let me see this, and I will decide myself on whether it's right that these people who want to see the full text under the Freedom of Information Act. I need to make that judgment myself, because I cannot trust, and this is a very strong part of his judgment, saying I cannot trust the Attorney General. In fact, the Attorney General has rendered himself untrustworthy, particularly in his handling of the Mueller report. The judge clearly implying that there is indeed a case for obstruction of justice to be made against President Trump, even though Attorney General Barr described the Mueller report at the time as, in effect, an exoneration of the president, if you remember. So that's a very interesting judgment. It's clear that serried ranks are building up against the Attorney General, not just in the Justice Department, where, as we know, his own staff are in rebellion against him for being just too cozy with the president. And now we have a federal judge joining in on that side of the argument.
I want to move over for just a second, and it just popped up on my screen in front of me, and America, and I don't know if the world in general is like this, but the pre-market stock market reports show that the stocks are going to open up and drop 700 points. They dropped 900 and some odd points the day before that. They were up, I think it was like 1,700 points up the day before that, and the way the media reports this, and it's not only the all business stations like CNBC or Fox Business News or Bloomberg, but the way this is reported, it's almost like it's a baseball game or a football game. Americans watch it, and it's almost like the media are trying to train you to look at this on a day-to-day basis. When my thought, and I'm not a big investor in the stock market, I never have been, I never will be, I never had enough free thought or ahead to do that. But the stock market is not one of these things that you can judge on a day-to-day basis. You have to look at it on an overall basis, where it's going up and where it's going down. What's the world's opinion of it seems now the news reliance to put the stock market up there as a true barometer, when really it is just a mere snapshot of a momentary action?
Yes, very sectional too in its significance. It applies to a certain area of the economy, but it is not, as economists are at pains to emphasize constantly when this issue comes up, there is such a thing as the real economy, and there is Wall Street, and they're not the same. They're reflections of each other in many ways, but they're not the same and not identical. And you're absolutely right about the day-to-day aspect of the media's attention being likely to lead us in an unhelpful direction if we watch maniacally the fluctuations from, you know, one 24 hours to another 24 hours. That's absolutely your caution and your concern about it is absolutely right. But consider why things like Fox Business Channel and CNBC even exist. It's another market. It's a media market, and it's an extremely valuable media market. When you get companies corporations spending money on advertising on those channels and on those channels only, and in their radio equivalents also, you might just think again about what kind of news you're getting from them. It's all an effort to grab eyeballs, and the phenomenon over the last 20 years of if you like amateur day traders taking over people's just about every spare moment they have. The caricature is the guy in the man cave in the basement on his computer trading for himself. That's a kind of gross caricature, but it's an indication of what's in the mind of the schedulers and the program planners of the financial news networks. They want more and more people watching. So what do? They do the same as they do with weather forecasts. They turn it into, yes, something very akin to sports broadcasting, with all the hype and all the exaggeration and all the insistence that we're looking at something you've probably never seen before. Just the tabloid exaggeration of this whole stretch of our media is all about just grabbing eyeballs and holding onto them day by day, and of course the fluctuation day by day is the main thing to grab excitement with. Otherwise, people won't come back during the next 24 hours. And that's a phenomenon, I think, that is very much of the media's own creation for its own financial betterment, they think. And I'm sure it's worked out very well for these specialist channels. But it doesn't help the warp and the waft of the media world as a whole, and the nation's understanding, you know, every nation's understanding of their own economies. If you view your economy purely through the lens of market fluctuations, then you've got no sense of what's going on really.
You know, it's interesting. I really have weaned myself almost entirely off of MSNBC and Fox and even CBS. First thing I do when I wake up in the morning is I go to not the BBC America, but I go to the BBC website that is basically the world website, which. And it's interesting to see the way they're covering the same stories that are covered here, because here the panic about coronavirus is basically confined to cruise ships and to what's happening in a few individual states. But when I look at the BBC news coverage in general, yes, they do mention the coronavirus, how like today, one of the lead stories, how the first case was in the Vatican. But they report it a little differently. They report cases like I'll be honest with you. They did a great report on the impact of the coronavirus in Iran. And what they end up pointing out in their coverage when they when I read their stories, is basically it's giving you a blueprint or a plan of how the different health organizations in each country, how effective or ineffective they are. And if you look at enough stories that come from the BBC, you really see that the American reaction is just abhorrently missing something that other reactions have in the world, and our healthcare system with the quality of healthcare that we have in this country, which is absolutely amazing, probably the best quality of healthcare you can have in the world. What we do,
the best quality that you can buy.
That's it. There you go. That's it. And you need people. I just say to people out there, try to broaden your horizons, because that's what you can see. Yes, we're Americans and we love America and we want America to be great at everything. But guess what? We're not.
Yeah, there are other ways of doing things. And your singling out of the BBC is interesting for me. As you know, I have worked for the BBC a little, but I'm one of the international journalists whose background in Britain was professional background was entirely that of commercial companies, but I believe that our commercial television in Britain, at least at the time when I was working in it, had very strong values, news values, and the capacity to make the kind of proportional and proportionate judgments about news and what was important, as you were describing the BBC as having when you talked about their full and balanced, if you like, and mixed and sensible, I guess, is another good word for what you're talking about this time too, as well as about, you know, not going into work when you're ill. The BBC is something of a guiding light, I have to say. I mean, I'm not going to praise it, you know, unreservedly. I have lots of criticism of the BBC, but yes, the important thing about what the BBC does and the way in which it does it when it's operating well is that it derives from an entirely different basis for gathering and putting out the news from any American broadcaster or any American and just about any American journalistic entity. The reason that the BBC and my side of the broadcasting firmament in Britain, the commercial side, and the reason that the commercial side, along with the BBC, tends to have that overarching sense of journalistic responsibility, is because the two things. The BBC was there first, and the BBC was there first, never, ever, initially at least, never as a business. It was never a business. It was always conceived right from the get-go as a public service. And that is what has made the entire difference between the BBC and any other kind of commercial effort to report and sell the news. The BBC is not trying to, of course, in the end, there ends up being the same kind of healthy competition in the economic marketplace. They want to get viewers. Sure, they have to justify the fact that their funding, a rather peculiar kind of funding that happens only in Britain, just about only in Britain anyway. Some other people have tried to copy it, but essentially you pay a license fee when you get a TV or once upon a time a radio. And that money goes into a central pool administered not directly by the government, but clearly the government's involved in the collecting of it. So strictly speaking, it's not government funded. And that enables it to keep some independence from the government of the day also. But it's a universally applied fee that people pay. And it's not advertising. It's not subject to commercial fluctuations. It's a kind of guarantor of independence and a guarantor of the BBC having values about its decision making that are not led by the marketplace. And that is the entire core of their difference from everyone else. And that's to their great credit. And although, you know, they come under lots of pressures and they sometimes don't do their job as well as they should, and they end up subjected to market forces in ways that they shouldn't really. The basic principle behind the BBC is that, yes, we deliver the news not because it's going to make money for us, but we need money, and we try and get money the best way, the best responsible ways we can in order to make the news, not the other way around. The news is not there to make money for us. We are asking for money in order to make the news or deliver the news.
Yeah, I'll point out, in America, we've been covering the story about the sheikh that rules Dubai, and you sit there and it sounds in the little bit that they do, it sounds you just wonder. And what the BBC does is they've got a whole spread on the sheikh, and they go into his background, who he is. They've got a good article on why they think that Elizabeth Warren, what happened to her, happened. Now, this is the BBC. They then take, after they do the Warren story, they have a story, five things that happened after women took charge. Now, these may sound rather slight to you, but to me, it doesn't, because they give far more background information to news stories than we get from American news sources.
I think something to do with the commercial nature of your seminal beginnings or your public service origins. That's the crucial difference between one approach to the media and I think in the end, inevitably, commercial broadcasting and commercial media generally are going to be at a disadvantage when it comes to providing a really balanced and proportional kind of service.
You know, I'll get off the BBC now because
I find it odd to be defending them so strongly, but I it's not patriotism on my part, nor is it loyalty to the institution itself, because I was always in the rival camp. But you know, I have to admit that they are a singular power for good journalism on the whole.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, and we make Americans make fun of news out of like the big coverage of the royal family and everything like that. But we'll get off the BBC for now. I just want to have you as a journalist in our last two or three minutes this morning take a look at how foolish American coverage of elections truly is. As a week ago, Bernie Sanders was a lock to win the nomination. And 1 week later, as we head into a Saturday, Joe Biden is a lock to win the nomination. It seems like our media can't cover things with a long view. They have to anoint leaders and winners right away after something happens. I want to take your view of the way this coverage has gone.
Well, it's all of a muchness with what you were just describing as coverage of the COVID-19 epidemic slowly becoming, or slowly, perhaps even quickly, becoming a pandemic across the world. The sort of instantaneous, the knee-jerk reaction of the media when it comes to the American media, especially of reporting the presidential campaigns, is just like their reaction to the epidemic slash pandemic. It's entirely about it. The hysteria is born of that desperate desire to grab eyeballs, as if they were reporting a football match, and all the conventions of sports broadcasting are brought to bear on election coverage. That's the same every 4 years, and in the off years as well. It's just sort of sewn into the fabric of American media, so much so that while it originates in the commercial area, the grabbing of eyeballs being so vitally important, it taints the public side of the equation too. Public television, I'm afraid, isn't a lot better when it comes to the horse race aspect of election reporting. A little better, and I'm grateful for that little better quality that comes. But on the whole, we're still in this rampaging tabloid hysteria much of the time, and it's to be regretted.
David, your comments are always appreciated and well received. We'll speak to you next week.
I look forward to that.
Take care. David Tarachuk with the Media Beat here on Robinhood Radio. And, of course, you can hear David on demand, robinhoodradio.com on demand. Click on the Media Beat with David Tarachuk.